part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm not doing part.
Fanboy.com. Shall we begin with the interview?
Yes.
Cool.
Please.
All right. Well, let's just start off by saying that this is the Part-Time Fanboy podcast. My name is Christian Horn. I have a very special guest on the line. I'm going to try and pronounce his name correctly since he sent me the pronunciation in advance, which is what I should do for all my guests. I have Dan Membiela. I totally got nervous. Membiela.
Oh, you said it so good. Yes.
Awesome.
Yes,
see, I set myself up for failure. Membiela, right?
Perfect. Perfect.
Dan, yes. Membiela. Awesome. Excellent. Awesome. I'm totally going to leave Membiela. That in. It makes me more lovable and relatable. I totally screwed up your last name. I apologize. And I'm kind of famous for that. But Dan Membiela, you are a creator, a comic book creator. You have a project launching on Zoop. We like to get straight to the point when people are crowdfunding. And it is called Under God.
Yes.
And the URL for Zoop is a little different. It's like zoop.gg, correct?
Yes, it is. Yes.
Yeah. And cool. Well, and, I got that. I got your last name wrong, but I got the URL right.
That's the more important of the two, yes.
Definitely. I guess so. But the project is called Under God. And already right there with the title, I'm like, where are we going? And, you know, you sent me a couple of pages in advance that they didn't have lettering in them. But so I'm assuming that this project is still, you're still kind of working on it. You're still putting
True.
It together?
That's correct. And Christian, before we get too far in, I want to first say thank you very, very much for making space for me on your show that you created. And I appreciate you being here and letting me be here with you. So thank you very, very much for that.
Thank you very much. I mean, I will have just about anyone who isn't a white supremacist or a Trump supporter. No, that's not true. I've had Trump supporters on my podcast. We didn't get into it. But white supremacists, no. But in any case.
Excellent. Excellent rule to live by. The more you know banner should be flying right now.
Exactly.
Can you put that in post? Can you just put that?
Yeah, we'll be fine. I mean, but no, I appreciate you coming on. I appreciate you getting in touch with me. I mean, podcast only works if people want to come on and chat and think it's worth coming on. So that means a lot to me, Dan. And, you know, I appreciate you coming on. But we did have some slight technical difficulties connecting, but that's par for the course in the age of COVID, I think. But let's talk about Under God. Let's begin. Why don't you do the elevator pitch?
So the elevator pitch, I got a chance to practice. I got into a Twitter space earlier, just a little while ago today, and I got a chance to run off the elevator pitch. And
nice.
You know what the conclusion that I've come to, Christian, is I'm going to do it backwards. So I'm going to give you a little more information, and
Sounds
then I'm
going
to give you the elevator pitch.
We do it however you like to do it. It is your space.
I'm changing the paradigm.
Yeah.
I'm changing the, switching it up.
Do it. So, break the rules. I like it. It's already called Under God, so.
Yes, exactly.
Let's get controversial.
So what is Under God? Under God is about what happens when your beliefs and your values are in conflict.
Uh-huh.
So Under God is about the weaponization of religion.
Okay.
Under God is about the end goal of some, you know, taking to the furthest logical, even seemingly absurd, but you can look around and find, sadly, that maybe it's not as absurd because people are actually saying it with their full throats now. The end goals of some far right talking points.
Mm.
And also it's all of those things and more, but it's also about something that I think I have in my work, because I also have a comic called Good Agent.
Oh, okay.
And that's available on Amazon Kindle right now.
Oh, okay.
And or whatever, aka formerly
Comixology.
The service big mess. Formerly known as Comixology.
Yeah.
So it's about the value of incremental good, that no amount of good done is inconsequential.
Uh-huh.
So that's something that I think just keeps popping up in my work.
Cool. We're going to get into it then, because I kind of want to discuss. I like this idea of incremental good.
Excellent.
Because, I mean, as we all know, the past 2 years, maybe 6 years for a lot of us have been kind of, you know, like a really weird space. And I don't know what aisle you sit on politically. I mean, I have talked about, you know, little things, but I haven't really gotten into it with anybody on this podcast, but I'm definitely a California liberal. I mean, I'm liberal all the way. I'm, you know, all the way to the left. I'm, you know, for a while I was a bit of a Bernie supporter. I'm totally fine with Joe Biden right now. But, the way that the sort of like last year, the Biden administration has unfolded and the talking points like leveled against him, while forgetting the previous 4 years, to me has been...
How convenient.
Yeah, it's just, it's been very sort of like, oh, okay. Like I feel like no matter what good you try to do these days, it just always just gets buried by the other side's like complete lack of like reality and how things kind of work in a weird way, and obviously with the economy. But so talk to me about the incremental good, because you got to restore my faith, man, because I'm definitely in a place these days where I'm just like, dude, it seems like no matter what we want to do, you know, help people get money during the pandemic, help them get medical treatment during the pandemic, like it just gets thrown back in our face as a negative. So talk to me about that a little bit.
So that really all starts in my comic, Good Agent.
Okay.
And Good Agent, speaking of the timeline that you were just mentioning, in 2016, excuse me, I got the bug to be like, you know, let's get back to comics. There's all these new ways to do comics. I'm just making the comic. No one's stopping me. I'm going for it.
Yeah.
So I had this whole concept of very diverse setting, a street level superhero, and, you know, I was just putting it all together, like, this is what are the things I want, where are all the flavors I want, and it was 2016, and as the year progressed and the election debates went on further and further and more was heard about things, I suddenly said, absolute. Okay, so wait, I'm absolutely not making any bad guy diverse in this first storyline. Mm. And it's totally going to be a white supremacist backstory, bad guys that the street level hero is up against. So I had originally, there's early little sketches of me and their names, and they were all like, you know, diverse mix of bad guy gangs, you know. And then that all got wiped out. I was like, okay, it's all the same silhouettes, but now they're all, you know, white supremacist sounding names. Like,
yeah.
And then that story really goes into that first 4-issue arc where Good Agent takes down this white supremacist cult, has this recurring beats of, especially at the first part of it and the last part of it, so the first issue and the fourth issue, that, you know, it's there's that concept of like if a butterfly flaps its wings in one part of the world, it can cause a storm in another part of the world.
Yeah.
And that's the thing everybody knows and everybody repeats that and is familiar with it, but in real life people don't feel that way at all. People feel, I see all the time where people feel like an excellent example of this is the NFTs, which I'm very, very much against. I hate NFTs immensely. NFTs, a popular comeback to NFTs are harmful and are just a scam, or that blockchain is harmful to the environment is, yeah, but you drive a car. Like, so in other words, if you do anything that has a negative footprint, then anything you try to do that has a positive footprint, it's moot. It's obsolete. Forget about it.
Yeah.
We live in a hellscape. Just dive into the hellscape. Live with the demons. Sure. Rub up against the demons.
Sort of whataboutism.
Yeah, exactly. So like, but where do we go with that? Does that just mean like, well, all right, just eat my neighbors, I guess. Like, everything's bad. Like, you know, just do whatever I want. Like,
well, why do good? Why do anything?
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Why do? So it's the answer to that. The value of incremental good is the answer to that question. That it does have a value, and in the face of a mountain of bad, one act of good is still there. It still has its value. It's still fighting against that mountain of bad. So that concept of like, that, you know, I mean, it's been out for a while, so I'm just gonna spoil a line in Good Agent. When the villain sees that she is about to be outdone by Good Agent, and she asks rhetorically, "What are you?" He replies, "I am the wings of a butterfly." So in other words, I'm just this one insignificant little thing, and I've completely undone your big operation.
Sure, sure.
So
under it's God, funny because we sort of that as well. Oh no, sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Under God touches on that same kind of a feel as well.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, it's interesting with everything kind of like happening in the Ukraine and stuff like that. We definitely kind of need those reminders that, you know, it's almost like the end of Willy Wonka where he gives like the ticket back, even though he's been, you know, Charlie's kind of been treated in the original Willy Wonka, not the Tim Burton Willy Wonka, where, you know, it's like, I don't remember exactly what the line that Wonka says when he gets a ticket back, but he says something like, one good deed shines in a world of, you know, and those are the sort of things, particularly now, where I feel like I need to be reminded of, you know, where it's very much like, it seems like everyone's just acting like dicks, right?
And going out of their way, like tripping over themselves.
Yeah. Which is part of the reason I try and pull away from social media these days. But it's such a weird thing because I feel like that sort of thing has also tricked you into the fact that like we need these to stay in touch with other people, right? But at the same time, it's kind of like a negative space in a way, right?
For sure. And it's designed to really, the best description I read was its purpose and design is to make you feel like you are missing out.
Sure.
That's laser guided to that purpose. But then, you know, I have many positive experiences on social media that I would miss very much if it had not existed. And I could have had them. I would have never found your show, for instance. but then other.
Well, that's good to know, because there was a time where I was thinking about dropping out of the social media space completely, like wondering, is this any good? But out of curiosity, where did you find it?
I was searching, indie comics podcasts, and you must have been tagged in something, or you must have used the hashtag, and then I found it. I've listened to a whole bunch of I've listened to four shows.
That's great.
You have a whole bunch of shows.
Yeah, I think I've heard there are a whole bunch. For sure.
I've listened to the four most recent shows. I believe the four most recent shows.
Sure.
And you know, I tried to vet everybody that I reached out to make sure, like, I'm not going to go on there and it's going to be, like, all, like, farts and swastikas, you know, so make sure that I'm going on the right show. Like,
sure, sure.
So, and you passed, Christian.
I passed. That's good to know. I have a passing grade in something because I was terrible at school. Thank you. Thank you so much for saying that. I don't know that it restores my faith, but maybe it makes it worth it for me, because there's definitely times where I'm like, am I posting this for any reason? Like, really, is anybody seeing this? And then
it's making you feel that way. But yes, you are posting it for a good reason.
That's so funny. But no, I mean, I really like it's interesting because the two things that popped into my head while you were talking about, and it's Good Agent, right? Like Secret Agent Man, right?
Correct.
Yeah, yeah. Where you're talking about that book, and I'm going to have to check that out. Somebody recently just gave me an Amazon Fire tablet, and I was just like, oh my God. Like, I've had Android tablets, like cheap Android, to read digital comics, but they've never been as like, and you know, this is not sponsored by Amazon at all. I am not like pro Jeff Bezos. I'm just stating a fact.
Get into orbit.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't need to walk in space right now, but although I'm sure he'd be happy to send me after bashing him a little bit, Jeff Bezos, but I was really astounded by how, and I know that iPad probably is really great as well, but those things cost like $300 or whatever. But I was astounded by how well the pages and everything moved, like when I was reading my comics, as compared to, you know, old Android tablets that I had had. So I will be reading more digital comics, because one of the things that I support a lot of, like Kickstarters and Zoops and Indiegogos, and I get the digital versions because there's only so much I can throw out at people, right? Because I have a podcast. But yeah. I was just, but anyway, that was just, I just veered off on a tangent, but going into another tangent, talking about what you were talking about, the thing that is funny to me, and you know, you talk about like fighting like white supremacy and bigotry and all that stuff, mm-hmm. is this really weird trend of like people talking about comics and like, how did they become so political and stuff like that? And I was like, dude, Captain America is literally fighting Nazis. And like, yeah. My two favorite superheroes are Superman and Captain America. And I think it's because I have father leader issues, but authority figure issues. I'm not going to lie. I think that's like the biggest thing around them. But you know, if you look at Superman, you know, Lex Luthor, particularly in modern days, has been portrayed as sort of like it's weird. It's like an anti-alien, anti-immigration sort of like weird stance, or why should I trust this person because he's different, right? And so the things that you're talking about are in mainstream comics, but I don't think that they deal with them as directly as like what you're trying to do, correct?
Right. Yeah, that's definitely the freedom of being a indie comic nobody. You can say, I can say whatever I want about anything I want. And according to social media, no one cares.
It's just, yeah, no, I mean, it's very weird.
Zero pushback.
I like that. It's funny. So talk to me a little bit about, because you were talking a little bit about like sort of like vetting, you know, podcasts and stuff like that. If you are tackling, you know, things like that, and you know, you've got people who, I forget what the word is, trolls, obviously, right? Who might discover your work and just be like, oh, what is this? And how could you be so woke? And, you know, things like that. And I just want to say the opposite of woke is asleep. So,
I love how words are just become co-opted by the other, you know, people, to then make them into pejorative.
Well, yeah, it's the same thing as liberal, right? It's you know, all of a sudden it's like a dirty word. It's like, well, wait, but we got you the 40-hour work week. We got you, childcare. You know, we've got you healthcare. Like as much as we could do when dealing with the opposing side. So woke is good to me, and so is liberal. Yeah. And it means awake and liberated. Yeah. But my point being that, like, so I have like a little mini comic that I do on the side when I have spare time, right? And
awesome.
Part of it is, you know, the story is very much, I mean, the look of it is very all ages, but at the same time, I'm trying to incorporate, you know, underpinnings of something, right? And not make it obvious, but that, you know, it's not overtly political, but there has been a thing with my second issue where I've been very hesitant to go forward because there is a part of me that is going up against sort of the fear of like, A, oh my God, like you're so woke, you know, why are you doing this? And that sort of thing. And then B, it's also very much like, why do you have the right to tell this story? You know, you're not the right ethnicity or skin color and stuff like that. So talk to me a little bit about going into your projects, you know, without fear or just addressing controversial issues and working through that, because it seems like what you've done so far and what you're doing with this project is approaching something in sort of a fearless manner and just going about it and being like, I just want to do this.
Yeah. And it's fear or no fear or courage. I mean, those never really occurred to me. I'm just trying to make the art that I want to make.
Sure.
And as I, something funny that a friend told me that ties in directly. I swear that I'm not going to go off on a 40-minute fishing story. Something funny that a friend told me when I was like talking about Good Agent, and I said, you know, it's kind of weird. They're just like one of the things in Good Agent that I cover is the paradox of tolerance. Are you familiar with that?
No, I mean, go ahead. I think I know what you're talking about though.
Yeah. The paradox of tolerance is that, if a society is so tolerant that it tolerates intolerant speech, and intolerant speech will propagate to a point where then it will end the tolerance that allowed the intolerant speech to exist in the first place.
Yeah. I have not heard it, said that way, but I know that I've said to a lot of people, like, I don't have to tolerate your intolerance. Like, you know
what
I mean?
Right. Like, you've never heard it phrased as poorly as I.
No. It's actually sounds like a much more educated and finessed way of saying it rather than, you know, I don't have to tolerate your intolerance. But no, it's interesting because I feel like, I mean, I live in Los Angeles and so much of like what, it, when you are creating something, so much of it is surrounded by like, can you sell it as a TV show? Can you sell it as a movie? Can it become something bigger? Can it become? And the thing of it is like, I, especially as I'm older and I have a family and, you know, these things cost money, as I'm sure you know, and especially if you're paying somebody to do it, are you drawing this? This is your own art as well, correct?
Any part that you don't like about this, I'm the person to complain to. I did the whole thing.
That's great. I mean, but I have so much admiration for people who are just something to what you just said, which is like, this is the art that I want to create and that I want to put out into the world, without sort of the worry or like, concern of like, will this sell to people? Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And Christian, I just want to just wrap up that point about the, you know, when I was talking about the, to my friend about, you know, these are just things that I think are obvious things, but they're just good reminders to people, kind of like you said earlier, like we need these reminders of things. And his response was, well, yeah, that's how it is with most manifestos. And I thought that was very funny because it was like, you know, oh yeah, I mean, Good Agent. I mean, anyone's artwork should be the ramblings of what it should be, their manifesto. Like your art should be what you believe, what you think, what you want people to understand about things. So he meant it as, you know, just like he was just goofing on me, making a joke, but it's actually an excellent point. And I've actually tweeted, like, if your comic isn't a manifesto, what are you doing? Like, why isn't your comic a manifesto? Like it shouldn't be just a procedural thing of, I made 22 pages of story that flows from panel to panel with words in it. Like, what are you telling us? Like, tell us your manifesto. That's what a comic should be.
Yeah.
That's what your comic should always be.
Or a very direct sort of like point of view, correct?
Yeah, exactly. And by manifesto, I don't mean everyone's comic should be hitting someone over the head with a 400 page, you know, written on the back of, garbage bags or something like that.
Well, there's the balance of ideas, like, hey, this is a good idea versus a well-told story, right?
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So you mentioned, you said something about getting back into comics, like in 2016. Had you been making comics before then and just sort of like dropped out or decided to take a break or?
Yes. So from listening to the Part-Time Fanboy podcast, Christian, I know that you and I are a similar age, I believe.
Sure.
So I made comics, I wrote comics for a few indie publishers in the 90s.
Okay.
And it was essentially just me trying to break in, and this was the paying gigs. These were the paying gigs that I could get. So it's not stuff that I really, it's not the properties that I wanted to be working on. It's not the type of necessarily even the stories that I wanted to be working on.
Sure.
I mean, imagine in the 90s indies, it was like Bad Girl stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So not, you know, not the most shining creative moment for me.
That's still around, my friend. Take a good look at Kickstarter. I am shocked.
Yeah, no, I know that it's still around, but at least, you know, I'm coming at it now from there's so many different ways to get your comic out there now.
Yeah.
That I'm coming at it, and just my perspective in life now is so different from then in the 90s that, you know, I really just have the I and everyone now has the luxury of just make your comic.
Yeah.
You know, make the comic that you want to make. You know, someone said you don't need a publisher to give you permission to make your comic. Like, make your comic.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in the 90s, it was like going to be a lot more expensive for you to make your comic, or, you know, unless you're just like stapling it at Kinko's and then putting it under your mattress or something. Like,
yeah.
There really wasn't a lot of ways to do that, to just make your own comic.
What were some of the titles? Can you name one or two, or is it too? Yeah, are you too mortified by it? Too,
like, no. I'm slightly on a scale. I'm about a six on the mortification scale. So, like, I wrote a lot for a company called Brainstorm Comics.
Okay.
So, like, one of the comics that I'm happier about was called Legends of Luxura. Was one.
Okay.
And then I wrote several things for at London Night Studios. Probably the one that I liked the most from them was called Dark Razor. It was a miniseries.
Okay.
So those were the, and I was just writing. So I've always been an artist, but I always was very down on myself on my sequential storytelling.
Sure. Sure.
So I always, and then of course, but yeah, so now I just thought I'm going to do it. And that piece of advice that everyone says the best way to get better at something is by doing it. I, when I look back at that Good Agent number one, oh my gosh, it's so cringy looking.
And sure.
Good Agent number seven.
Sure.
I think looks good. I'm real happy with how Good Agent number seven looks. I'm very proud.
That's great.
And I think Under God looks even better.
Yeah. So I'm, yeah. Well, how long does it generally take you to put a book together? Like,
it takes a long time.
Yeah.
It's so hard to make a comic.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, that's the thing that I'm looking at, right? Like, I'm working on the second chapter of my thing, and I originally started it like maybe five, I don't know how many years ago, like drawing it, coloring it, trying to write it in my spare time when I had time.
Yeah.
And I look at the first issue, and there's definitely pages where I'm like, what? But, and my wife is constantly just being like, don't go back, just keep going for it. And I'm like,
yes,
okay,
right.
Fine.
Listen to her. Keep going forward. There's nothing back there for you.
Yeah. Yeah. There's nothing back there for you. So what was it about, like, how many issues of Good Agent did you do?
So I have seven issues in the, you know, out there already.
Okay.
And the seventh issue is the first part of a three-part story. So,
okay.
At some point I'm going to get back and finish that story. I mean, it only came out, I think it came out September of 21 was when Good Agent 7 came out.
Sure.
So that was a 22-page book. Under God is a 44-page graphic novel. So I'm just on the tail end of finishing that. And I expect to be done with it, all of the initial art, by the time the campaign ends on June 10th.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, and you're lettering all that good stuff?
Yeah.
Nice.
Lettering it. It's black and white, but there's still, you know, some Photoshop, like I put in, you know, screen tone and stuff like that.
So. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. No. So are you, it seems like you're doing it sort of like traditional, sort of analog, the original art, like you're doing it on paper.
Yes.
And you're doing that.
Most definitely. Yeah.
Gotcha. Totally. Gotcha.
When I hit control N for me, means taping a new piece of paper down onto the drawing board.
Yeah. Control N. Nice. No, that's great. So what was it about, like, this new story that you kind of needed to tell? I mean, because it looks like from the pages that I saw, it's occurring in sort of this, like, very sort of dystopian, totalitarian sort of world. And I have not read Good Agent, but what was it about this story that you wanted to tell where you were like, I can't do this in my other book. I need to do something completely different and a completely new story, because obviously you're sort of trying to balance your original property, right? And you kind of want to keep moving on that. And trust me, I understand like getting distracted. Like I'm number one at like, oh, I need to sit down and draw my page. Oh, wait, I want to draw a picture of Supergirl. You know what I mean? Like I will do that all the time.
Right. Which is such a common thing. Like I'll be like, so I'm so close now, this many pages left. And I'll see an anthology submission like, yeah, I can sneak in another six pages. Let me submit to this anthology. Like, well, let's finish this project. I've tried hard to not, I've actually passed on a lot of anthology submissions. Not that I've applied to other ones and haven't been accepted, but I've only applied to ones that really, really stood out to me, because, you know, I want to be in the point where when the campaign is done, it's just wrapping up the digital effects and the lettering, and then hitting that, getting it printed and hitting that fulfillment date of September 1st. So
yeah.
I really want to make sure that I hit that.
Wait, so going back a little, when did you walk away from comics? Like, when were you just like, I'm just kind of done right now?
Yeah, so it was, must have been very early 2000, like, or if not actually 2000, where it was, I think one of those publishers was frowny face with me because I didn't want to sign an exclusive contract with them.
Mm.
And then the other publisher had me write a novelization of one of the comics I did with them, and then just bailed on paying for that. And then I think it was that night when I found out that this place had no intention of paying me, that I said, you know, and I had two small kids.
Sure.
And you know, and I had a day job, but I was like, I have other things in my life that need this time that I'm wasting on these people who are not coming through for me.
And
it wasn't really panning out for me. Like, so yeah, I had a comic box of, here are all my printed comics, but when I would send out packets and things to other publishers, it really wasn't making that much of an impression on them. Like, you know, they were like, all right, well, you and everybody else has a bad girl story in the
90s
indie comic. But, so then I was less like, I'm done with comics. Like, so
were you
just
making them, or were you done collecting them, or were you, because I mean, I've had people recently on the podcast who've been like, I was just done, like I just dumped everything. And I've definitely had moments when I was, you know, if we ever get the chance, I'll tell you about my first San Diego Comic Con, which made me stop reading comics for a year because I was so freaked out.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I just, there were other things. A girlfriend broke up with me, and I was just, it was definitely a thing of where it was like, my ego was too tied into it. You know what I mean? Where it's like, I can't be identified with this. Like, I need to be, you know, when you're a young man. We've all had those instances of like where we kind of needed to walk away. Some people like, you know, go to college and they have to pay for college and, you know, or it just doesn't do it for them anymore. Did you just like stop collecting and reading or?
No, I was still a comics fan and I still, you know, picked up books. But just that whole concept of like, looking up like who's got their submissions things open. Like I used to buy Comics Buyer's Guide, newspaper kind of thing. And then they had little want ads in the back, and I used to send all kinds of junk to packets. So you know what a SACE is, right?
A what?
SASE.
No, what? Wait, off the top of my head, I don't seem to.
Oh, I thought being from that era, I can only imagine that any young person who might be listening to this podcast in the future has already long ago shut it down and unsubscribed. Christian, I'm sorry, because it's the old people talking about this.
No, it's about
comics.
It's history.
But
it's but important.
Sort of like the thing was always like a self-addressed
stamped envelope.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So yeah,
all those submission things said like, you know, one page plot whatever with SACE, like,
yeah,
see, like,
See, that's how they used to do it back in the day, kids. Yeah,
that was it. Yeah, there was no Google form.
There was no internet. Shut your mouth. No. Well, there was, but it was like you were listening to a screechy dial tone. Like, Oh, wow. Yeah. I could see that. I mean, it's interesting because it seems like the bar was so much higher, like back in the day. And now with the internet, like the democratization of like art and stuff like that has kind of like opened up new boundaries, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely.
That's great. So,
I just quit with all the submissions and it was, am I jumping ahead?
Go ahead. Back into comics?
So in between that time period, there were several times where I thought like, you know what, just for fun, I'm going to try to make a comic. And then I always got down on myself, thinking about how the art was going to look and stuff. And then I just never really did it. And in 2016, the DC Comics Writers Workshop was accepting submissions, and I thought, I'm in a place now where this sounds good to me. I'm going to submit to this. And I had to go back. One of the things you had to do was, show examples of your published work and get a recommendation letter from someone that you worked with in the past.
Oh, really?
Trying to get a recommendation letter from people that you worked with, almost 20 years before?
Yeah.
That was really a test of feeling good about yourself. Like, that was really excellent. So, I submitted with no recommendation letter.
Yeah.
But I loved the idea of it so much. And I didn't get accepted, of course. Which then also turned into, that was a whole weird thing, because why don't they have editors that should be doing this? Like, and also if the people that are going to be in this program are, which I'm very happy for all of them, are very prominent independent comic people, you can't just contact them yourself? Editors? Like, so it was just a whole weird thing, but
It seemed a good writer, you're a good writer. Or if you're a good artist, I mean, I suppose maybe they would want something about like your work ethic, but if it's like a workshop or a contest or something, like that seems very odd to me.
Yeah.
I would imagine that your talent should stand on its own merit, and then discussions as to whether, like, how long did it take you? Can you do this? Like, that sort of thing would come later. That seems a little odd to me.
I mean, those were hilarious emails. Like, hey, we've never even emailed before, but you drew some bad girl story that I wrote almost 20 years ago. Would you like to write a letter?
Oh my God.
That I'm good for this program. I mean, it was like the debasing was, to the nth degree. It was a wonderful experience. So anyway, I didn't get into that, but that's what made me think, I really want to make, I've always loved making this type of art. I was always writing it before, but I really wanted to make this again. So then that's what started the whole, the impetus of Good Agent.
Sure. Well, let's talk about Under God. What is sort of like the basis of the story? Because like I said, it looks very dystopian. It looks like there's definitely a couple of like riot scenes, it seems like, in the stuff that you sent me. And there's some creepy guys in masks with question marks, which might have worked better than the Riddler costume in the Batman, which I was not a huge fan of. But talk to me about what Under God is about, just the general plot.
Okay, so I think now that I told you what Under God was at the beginning, now I can hit you with a real stilted log line, which is a young woman's mission of mercy turns deadly as she learns her role in the oppression of those she meant to aid.
Nice.
So essentially, yes, it is this kind of authoritarian America, theocratic America, and they are doing what good Christians love to do, which is give charity. Mm-hmm. And she is part of this big deal where, and the masks are part of the event of the charity caravan that she's in. And it's a question mark because there is that line in the Beatitudes where Jesus says that when you give alms, your left hand should not know what your right hand is doing.
Yeah.
So so that what you do is done in secret. So then they wear these masks so no one can know that they're the ones who are giving. So they're unmasked before the ceremony begins. They put the mask on before the ceremony, and then they would take the mask off after the ceremony.
Oh, that's
but something
cool.
Happens to the main character where she doesn't get to go back right away and take the mask off. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no. That's a very cool concept. Like, I like that. That's interesting. I mean, obviously the idea of sort of not ego-driven charity, you know, which seems to be the case today, you know, where people are like, I donated, you know, this many millions and millions. And it's like, okay, great. Or you're stealing from, you know, veterans charities, your kids are stealing from veterans. I don't know who that might be that I'm talking about. I don't know, but, or kids charities.
They're not allowed. Like someone who might not be allowed to run another charity in the state because.
Yeah. I don't know. Who could that be?
Hypothetically.
Speaking. Yeah. Hypothetically speaking about that person that may or may not exist, but, or that group or that family. But no, that's really cool. I like that idea of sort of like people. I mean, it's interesting because you're sort of doing a good deed, but in the way that you're illustrating it to me, and you know, it didn't have words or text, and I was kind of trying to make sense of this. I mean, I could read the storyline, like what was happening, but with that added bit of information from it was, or without that added bit of information, it kind of was like, ooh, a little creepy to me. Like I was like, oh, there are these people with masks. And then later on, there's sort of like a confrontation, it looks like, with authorities and stuff like that. So I like that idea of people being, it's almost like it reminded me a little bit of like a Handmaid's Tale sort of like reality.
Yeah, definitely. I have only a tangential knowledge of Handmaid's Tale.
Oh, okay.
So, but yes, I think that there is a lot of parallel in the, well, it's mostly that it's it's a theocracy that's in place in Handmaid's Tale, right? But doesn't it kind of like it almost seems to me like it devolves technology a little bit, like they go backwards.
Yeah, at least in the show. I have not read the book, but in the show that we're watching, it's definitely a thing of where, I mean, I think it's the sort of thing where kind of like Spock in the Mirror, like Star Trek episode. Yeah, we're going full nerd
let's
here.
Let's get into Star Trek now.
Well, you know, it's very much that sort of thing where like a dictatorship is illogical because it cannot, you know, continue to support itself. Or what we're seeing now with Putin, right? Where the world is sort of like, yeah, we're not going to support you with this. We're not going to support, you know, we're going to, we can't do anything overt because nuclear weapons, but we can, you know, keep you from getting funding and stuff like that. And so in The Handmaid's Tale, I think it is very much self-imposed because of the religious restrictions that they've put on themselves. You know what I'm saying?
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah.
So Under God has a big part of the setup at the beginning is that Holy America is walled. So, you know, good news, America, we got our big, beautiful walls built. So, so that's great for us. But the concept that I have in mind is, would it be, if the mentality is to build apartheid walls, would we as those future Americans, would we stop at just the country's border, or would we, you know, there was all this talk about red America and blue America.
Yeah.
Would building walls be an excellent way to cement that concept of a red America?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I mean, if you're asking me, I don't think totalitarianism or that sort of empire stops, right? I mean, it spreads. And the thing with particularly really strict religious ethos is the fact that everyone must obey it, right? There's no kind of like leeway, right? So if that person is not doing what I think is righteous, then I must make sure that they are, so that I must have my own peace of mind, right?
Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Or that God commanded me to, or whatever deity, you know?
Right. Right. Yeah. And you said it, you said something that's important to me that I just want to make, I want to say, the way you phrase that, I think you said something like, was it totalitarian religious? The way you just brought up religion, I just want to say that, and also you mentioned earlier, like, you know, you're going into some topics that are like taboo.
Sure.
Topics. The under God is not disparaging of any religion.
Mm-hmm.
Under God is immensely disparaging of those who would weaponize religion.
Sure.
So there's a nuanced distinction there.
I mean, that's sort of the thing in Handmaid's Tale too. I mean, you kind of know where it's coming from, and you know where the sort of like underlying tenets come from of this theocracy, right? But they don't overtly kind of like say it, you know? And so that's what you're saying is that your, whatever theocracy is running, you know, running your world or your United States, it's not necessarily one religion that exists right now.
In the art pages, that I sent you, I think you can see the little mason work figures that are above the edges of the gate. So it's definitely a Christianity.
Sure,
For certain, it's a Christianity.
Okay.
That's even when if I had a lettered, those were just raw scans I sent you of original art. If I had the lettered version, I mean, there's that beatitude line gets stated. There's a priest that is getting them ready for their kickoff at the charity caravan. I'm not sure if you remember those pages. That's exactly what he's saying. He's reading off that.
So no, I understand. I just like any particular sort of branch or anything like that.
It doesn't drill down to that.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm sorry. It is exactly like you're saying. So I guess what you're saying is Handmaid's Tale makes it clear that it is Christianity.
I guess I just didn't want to say it out loud. People might be listening, you know, but I think that in Handmaid's Tale, it is very obvious. And so that's what I was sort of equating it to a bit, but it's interesting. Are you religious now? Did you grow up with a religious background? I mean, you mentioned the Beatitudes, so I'm like, well, you must know something about it.
So yes and yes. So I was born into and grew up Catholic. I've had all the Catholic sacraments. So I do consider myself a Catholic person, which is part of why I wanted to write this, especially in this time where, you know, I also recently have started saying that I really think I'm a closet Episcopalian rather than a Catholic. So that's a religion joke for whoever gets that. But so, cause yes, I'm a progressive Catholic.
Sure.
And to stand shoulder to shoulder, to have stood shoulder to shoulder with people who I know believe all kinds of horribly hateful things, is very disturbing to me. So part of that, one of those opposite what it's about, not the log line, but what it's about when I said, what happens when your beliefs and your values are in conflict? That's kind of what I'm addressing there, that there are beliefs, things that you believe, and then there are the values in the way that you present those beliefs. And then when you find that if I'm told that we're all brothers, and at the same, it's kind of like Hal went crazy because he was told not to not to tell the truth in 2001. So anyway, yeah. when you're told these people are bad and we all love everyone, like, you know, so which is it? Like, can you someone rule that out for me and tell me which way to go on that? So
yeah, well, I mean, there's things in every religion that are sort of hypocritical or balance against each other and things like that.
Those things are called people.
Yeah. Yeah. Or the fact that it was written by people. Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. Like, it doesn't make sense. You said this in one part of the book and then the other part of the book says this. I don't understand. Yeah. Who should I listen to? Jesus or God? Help me out.
The best description of organized religion I can think of is that the messenger is constantly getting in the way of the message.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, I'm not afraid to say I am a lapsed Catholic. I went to Catholic school up until eighth grade, and after that, I was like, I'm done. Kind of done here. I'm done, and have never gone back. I consider myself more agnostic than anything else. So, but I do not have an agenda towards anybody who believes their own thing and doesn't want to impose it upon me. You're good. You're good to go. I
feel the exact same way. I mean, I grew up in a household that was very Catholic, and my mom was also, she was kind of an enigma because she was maybe the most Catholic lady you could ever meet, and also the most spiritual lady you could, like, and by spiritual I mean like believing in afterlife and believing that in resurrection and believing in, like, so she was very into metaphysical is maybe the better way to say that, very metaphysical person and a staunch Catholic. So I grew up in that in that riddle of a belief system. So I am very much a believer in that there is something out there, and that everyone's words for that thing that's out there are just pointing to the same thing that's out there.
Yeah, no, I'm kind of the same way. I'm like, whatever it is, I don't think it's a man in the sky with a big flowy beard, but, whatever it is, I do think that there's something out there. I just don't know what it is. And I feel that anybody who tells me that they do know doesn't know what they're talking about and cannot be trusted. That's just me.
Right.
As soon as you think you say you know everything to me, it's just like, yeah, I can't trust you.
Right.
You know, unless you're a scientist, and then I'm like, okay, you know more than I do. But but when it comes to stuff like this, religion, metaphysics, aliens, things like that. I'm like, no, if you say you know it all, I'm not not grouping aliens in with religion, people. Relax. I hear you out there hyperventilating. Stop it.
Naming Christianity, and now all this talk about now aliens and Christianity. This podcast is
we've just gone off the rails. Let me ask you one maybe not final question, because I've had you here for almost an hour. But so you're going to Zoop, and why Zoop? What is it that, from my understanding, I mean, I interviewed a creator on Zoop, I think when they were starting to launch or get kicked off, I'm not sure. And just going to their webpage, it seems like they've picked up a lot more properties. In the past, to me, it seemed like they were going out to people and saying like, hey, we're starting this thing called Zoop. Did you just decide, like, why Zoop? Why did you go Zoop and not Indiegogo, not Kickstarter? What was appealing to Zoop?
So thank you very much. That's an excellent question. And also, for anyone who has made it this far into the show, first off, kudos, congratulations. And also that if you want to know about Zoop, you can see their Twitter feed at We Are Zoop.
Yeah.
And I got into, Under God was always going to be Kickstarter.
Sure.
That was the plan.
Yeah.
Under God's going to Kickstarter. I'm going to do the whole Kickstarter thing. I'm so psyched. I'm all about it. I listened to their YouTube videos on, or read all their stuff, whatever. I was all set to go.
Nice.
And then they said, hey, by the way, Kickstarter is going to be moving to a blockchain platform. don't worry, it's going to be super cool. We don't have any details to tell you about it, but it's definitely going to be blockchain. And that's all. Goodbye. We'll tell you more whenever we feel like it. So when I read that, I'm very much against crypto. I'm very much against blockchain. I'm very much against NFTs. I said, I need to go somewhere else. Like, I don't want to have my book. So remember, we talked at the very beginning about the value of incremental change. That was my incremental change. So at the time when I said, I'm not going to do anything that helps promote this hellscape that blockchain is a part of any more than I have to be because I live in this society.
So I said,
I need to find another option. I had pre-ordered Zupad, the John Paul Leon artist edition of The Winter Men. So I had pre-ordered that, and I thought, ooh, wouldn't it be good if Zoop did that? And then other people were talking about Zoop, and Zoop was awesome. And right there, when Kickstarter made their announcement and people like me were worried about it, and then they were very good, and they said, look, we're not set up right now, but we will be, and we're going to do this. And then right away, on a dime, they turned around and they were like, okay, now we're accepting, you know, not submissions, but we're open for to hear what you want to put on the website. And so I thought, for them to be that receptive to the indie comics community, and for them to jump on it like that when I was freaking out, and I'm sure lots of other people were freaking out. I was like, no, it's Zoop all the way, Zoop or bust. So, gotcha. And they've been excellent to work with. They really, really are doing a great job.
So I have high
hopes for a successful campaign with them.
And my understanding is that they also take care of like other elements, right? It's not just like you on your own. They kind of help with certain aspects of the campaign, or
at my level, it's essentially what the other crowdfunding places
do. Okay,
so
cool.
If like, for instance, the John Paul Leon book, they handle a lot more of it. If you were like a big creator with a project, they've had other other big creator books. I think they described it as like a concierge service.
Did
I say that right? Concierge?
Concierge. Fancy
service. So I don't rate that, but I can get a room in the hotel. I have to go down to the diner and get my own food, and I have to get my own ice.
Well, that's
stuff.
Good. As long as the hotel's there and you've got like a nice comfy bed and a blanket, and a nice pillow, the bathroom's clean. You'll be good.
Exactly.
No, I mean, I checked out the site this morning and I saw they have a Rocketeer thing on there, and I'm a huge fan of the Rocketeer. Like, I love Dave Stevens stuff. I love the Rocketeer. I love the movie. I have a bunch of Rocketeer stuff in my house. It's awesome. It's a problem. But I saw that they had a Rocketeer thing, and I was like, oh, interesting. But yeah, we're not talking about the Rocketeer on Zoop. We're talking about Under God. Where can people find you online, Dan? Like, where do you have a particular website or on Twitter or evil social medias? Like, where can people locate you?
If you want to feel like you're missing out and hear what stupid things I have to say, Twitter is the best place to go, which my handle is @HalRoth. So @HalRoth.
Oh, okay.
Gotcha. So why that name? That's a weird name, right?
Yeah,
so
I was wondering.
Another thing I did in the 90s was for a very short time, do you remember an old comic book website? Again, sorry, young people. Do you remember an old comic book website called Silver Bullet Comics?
Yes, I remember Silver Bullet Comics.
Do you remember an article called The Truth About Comics?
No, I do not.
So there was an article... There was a column called The Truth About Comics, and I was writing it under the pen name Hal Roth.
And
it was essentially anything I didn't like about comics, this guy loved. So it was like a parody. It was like a Stephen Colbert riff.
Interesting.
Like, so anything I thought was, this is what's bad in comics, that guy was writing an article about why this is great in comics.
And so that was you.
That was me writing it. Yeah.
Secret identity revealed.
Yes.
Oh my yes. God. Well, but any final thoughts? Oh no, go ahead.
Remember that website. Only the olds will remember what that website is.
Well, I remember it. And yes, I'm young at heart, and that's all that matters. I am a little sunflower in the sun, trying to stretch my leaves, my petals. But any final thoughts about Under God while we wrap this up, that, Dan?
Just that Under God is a small batch indie comic that I, an artisanal small batch comic that I am making just for you. I'm pointing right at the camera right now. Just for you. So please check it out at zoop.gg/c/undergod.
And what's the date of the launch?
The date of the launch, so the pre-launch page is live right now.
Yeah.
But the campaign goes live May 10th.
May 10th. Oh, okay, 10th. Cool. Oh, yeah. So by the time this goes up, this is your advance notice, like a month away. But definitely check out the page. I will have links on the site as to where you can go to, you know, for the pre-launch page and get notified when it launches,
yes.
Correct?
Correct.
Cool. Cool. Well, Dan, it's been wonderful to have you on. And the other book is called Good Agent, and that's on Amazon, Kindle, Comixology, whatever they're calling it these days, right?
Whatever Jeff wants to call it, yes. Thank you, Jeff, for making that possible for me. I don't like that you're shooting old men into space, but thank you for making that possible for me.
That's funny. Okay, cool. All right. Well,
this has been awesome. You're awesome. Thank you for putting this together. Thank you for having this space. And thank you for letting me have access to your space.
Of course.
I really, really
thank you for coming on. And thank you for being so enthusiastic about it, quite honestly. Sometimes I feel like I'm the man in the tinfoil hat standing on the corner of Hollywood and Sunset, you know, or Hollywood and Vine, and being like, listen, talking about comics here, I'm talking about movies. So whenever a creator like you, you know, approaches me and is like, hey, I'd like to come on, it is my pleasure and privilege to have you on.
Great.
I mean,
just remember, there's always somebody with a bigger tinfoil hat.
Are there? My tinfoil hat is pretty big. It's like a radar, man. It's giant. It's like a Charlie Brown comic where it's like I fall over on the side of my, like it's so big.
Here I am. And
well,
yet here I am.
Yes, here you are. And your name is Dan Membiela.
Membiela. Yes.
Membiela. Dan Membiela. Yeah. Okay,
no,
got it that
good.
Time. I am so sorry. I'm terrible at pronouncing names. We all know this. And you sent me the pronunciation in advance. Membiela. Okay, I will try and
because
remember
I heard
that.
I heard you really trying and being concerned when you didn't get it right. So I am concerned
because people's names are important. I get like Kristen and Chris. I don't like Chris. Don't call me Chris. I hate it. I like my full name, Christian. Yeah, and my full name is Christian Horn. And this is the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. Please go check out Under God on Zoop. Whenever you get the chance, there will be links on our page, parttimefanboy.com, where you can sign up and for the pre-launch page and be notified as to the actual launch. Again, this is Part-Time Fanboy. Again, my name is Christian Horn. Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all that wonderful social media stuff. Our email is ptf@parttimefanboy.com. And thank you for listening and check out Under God. And we will be back soon with another episode. Bye.